We are joined by Washington insider Dave Leventhal. Dave, good morning.
Good morning to you, Joe. Happy game day. I can only hope that my day will end as well as it's beginning, talking to you with a Bills victory as I board the Greyhound bus from Baltimore back to Washington, D.C.
Oh, Dave.
And the Bills play the Ravens.
That is beautiful. I appreciate that. I hope the game ends better than the one on Friday did, because we all know that was a catch.
Very, very sorry for you.
Oh, man. The ACC. The ACC grabbing victory from Virginia Tech. Dave, I do have to ask you before we get to politics, though, what's the tailgate in Baltimore look like?
Pretty darn good. There's a formal Bills tailgate. You got to pay some money to go to that one, but there are lots of informal tailgates, and pretty much the way it goes in Baltimore, as is the case in many away games for the Bills, is as long as you get your Bills jersey on, you can walk up to just about any people with red, white, and blue and a Bills logo on it, and you're going to get a hot dog and a beer and a really good time. So it's usually a pretty celebratory crowd, and I intend to take full advantage of that with my group of friends up there. Great.
Yes, Buffalonians. Just make sure you make noise once you're in the stadium.
That won't be a problem, Joe.
Dave, lots to get to when it comes to the election. We'll start with what you're going to hear live here on News Radio 930 WBEN Tuesday night, the CBS News vice president debate. You know, Dave, there usually isn't a lot of chatter around the VP debate. Is it any different this year?
It is, and for a couple of reasons. Number one, most notably, is that we have fewer debates, and there's a very strong possibility, although not completely guaranteed, that there will be no second presidential debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. So Donald Trump has said no, he's not going to do a second one. He's already done one with Joe Biden. He's already done one with Kamala Harris. It's done so for him. But Kamala Harris is using this as an opportunity to say, hey, Donald Trump is trying to hide. If you were watching the big Alabama-Georgia football game last night, there was an ad run by the Harris campaign nationwide that directly chided Donald Trump for dodging the debate, in their opinion, and not going ahead and having a second one. So bottom line is J.D. Vance and Tim Walz, this may be it in terms of the two sides actually getting together face-to-face, mano-a-mano, and having a conversation, having a debate, having an argument, whatever it turns out ultimately to be. So the stakes are going to naturally be a little bit higher as a result of that, too, particularly with early voting already starting in so many states around the country and people actually having cast their ballot or about to cast their ballot. They're going to hear from these candidates for the last time in that context, and that means something.
Yeah, you talk about states that are already voting. Our last two guests of the first hour, one will be on stage with President Trump in Erie, Pennsylvania, the other one knocking doors in Pennsylvania. We've seen a lot of that from Buffalo Republican and Democrats going just 90 minutes south and doing campaigning, because Pennsylvania does seem to be one of the most important states in this election.
It is, hands down, bottom line. And whoever wins Pennsylvania, it probably has a pretty darn good chance of winning the whole election. It's that much of a bellwether state for the ultimate result all across the country. And the two candidates are spending an inordinate amount of time and effort and resources and money. And you're going to be seeing both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, and for that matter, J.D. Vance and Tim Walz, in Pennsylvania, along with the other swing states, but certainly Pennsylvania right at that top of that list. That's how important it is, Joe.
So the VP debate, you've got one governor, one senator, obviously on the two tickets. Will we hear the same questions we heard from ABC? Is there something more VP-centric we might hear in this debate?
A little bit, and this is where it gets interesting. The vice presidential candidates, just like vice presidents themselves, they play second fiddle to the presidential candidates and the president. So, you know, this is going to definitely be one where, in a way, it's going to be a sort of a proxy exercise. And what I mean by that is that the candidates are going to be representing their number one's positions a lot. They're going to be representing the ticket's positions and not necessarily what they believe, if it all conflicts one even little bit with the way that Donald Trump for J.D. Vance feels or Tim Walz for Kamala Harris. And this is going to get a little dicey, too, because we've had a couple of news breaks, Joe, just in the past couple of days, the Washington Post came out with a pretty bombshell report about direct messages that they had obtained from the recipient of messages from J.D. Vance back in 2020, where J.D. Vance said, hey, I think Donald Trump is going to lose, and that Donald Trump's economic populism has been a failure. So expect that J.D. Vance is going to be asked very much about that, or that Tim Walz is going to take the opportunity to criticize on him on that. Now, the Vance campaign or the Vance camp has said, well, no, I was talking about other Republicans who have since come around to Donald Trump and how they were blocking Donald Trump's agenda. But he didn't really say anything about why he thought Donald Trump was going to lose in 2020, which was a prediction that ended up being prescient and something that proved to be true. But Tim Walz, on the other hand, he's got his own set of problems as well, in that he's not really a known commodity across the country. He has not written a national best-selling book, as J.D. Vance has. He is not a U.S. senator who has a bit of a more national platform than Tim Walz does as the governor of Minnesota. And as a result, there's a possibility, I think, that Tim Walz could be a little too folksy for his own good at this debate. And J.D. Vance, who's an incredibly skilled debater, probably one of the best debaters that you could want up there on the stage behind the two lecterns that the candidates are going to be standing behind. He's going to be in a good position to really hammer Tim Walz if Tim Walz is not up to the task. And by Tim Walz's own admission, he's not a great debater. So for Tim Walz, almost, it's sort of a do-no-harm debate, where he may not be angling for a victory here, but he's definitely trying to prevent against a loss. A little bit of a prevent defense here, if you want to continue the football talk here today.
Well, Dave, as I've always said, you know, like his policies or don't, I think a lot of Republicans out there wish that Trump spoke more like J.D. Vance.
A lot of Republicans do, and J.D. Vance, and that's just a fact. Now, Donald Trump's attraction is that he is so off the cuff, and he's willing to say anything that's on his mind at any time, but that is, as we all well know, the ultimate double-edged sword for Donald Trump. J.D. Vance, he has very cogent thoughts. He can stay very much on message. He is very picked in his criticism of others. He can really put together a policy proposal and detail it and articulate it. So all the things that Donald Trump lacks as an orator, J.D. Vance kind of has. And so that can make him, of course, a little bit boring and not so Trumpy to people who are full supporters of Donald Trump. But in the context of a debate where it's not going to be Donald Trump on stage and it's not going to be Kamala Harris on stage, it's going to be Tim Walz on stage against J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance definitely goes in, at least on paper, Joe, having the upper hand, rhetorically speaking.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned very likely this is the last debate involving any candidates. Has there been any talk, obviously the spot that played during the football game yesterday from the Harris campaign, has there been any talks, Dave, and is there anything that can happen in this vice presidential debate that would make another, you know, one of the campaigns go, okay, let's jump in for that second debate?
I think the most obvious scenario would be if J.D. Vance did have a bad night for one reason or another, for reasons we couldn't quite predict right now. And if somehow Tim Walz comes out and really just socks it to J.D. Vance, then the Trump campaign may be reconsidering a little bit its approach to this. And Donald Trump, who at any moment in time could change his mind and simply say, yeah, I agree to another debate, let's do it. And then Kamala Harris would almost certainly agree to that, and there would be another debate. The networks, of course, would be delighted to have both of them show up on their stages and conduct another debate, and that could come together very, very quickly. So, you know, never rule anything out, and yes, absolutely, there is a scenario where that could happen. I think if the opposite holds true and J.D. Vance does very well, as people generally expect he is going to, and worse, it's a kind of a wash for him, that we're probably not looking at another Harris-Trump debate at some point in the next couple of weeks.
I'm sure this idea has already been floated, but, you know, I think a great idea for a debate, Dave, is to have, you know, moderators from stations that we know lean one way, right? So you have Bret Baier as one moderator and someone from MSNBC as the other moderator. I think you'd get the campaigns to agree to that right away.
And, you know, it's unlikely that that's going to happen this time around, but obviously it would be something that would be not, pretty unprecedented. it would really be definitely something that would be quite a departure from what we've seen in recent years. And already this is the season is a departure from what we've seen in past election cycles, in that we don't have a debate commission that is actually leading any of these debates. It's really been down to the candidates' campaigns and the networks negotiating this out directly with each other, coming together and agreeing to the rules. And I should note, Joe, that the rules are going to be a little bit different this time around for the vice presidential candidates as opposed to Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. The biggest departure, I think, is going to be the return of hot mics, meaning that the candidates will be able to interrupt each other, and everyone's going to be able to hear those interruptions. CBS, who's hosting the debate, said that they still reserve the right to turn the mics off kind of in real time, live as the candidates are speaking, but the default is not going to be that the mic will be off if you are not speaking, and the mic will be on if you are speaking.
Dave, obviously the last debate, I think most people can agree that it was not Trump's best debate. Did we see the polls shift after that debate?
A little bit, and it depended which poll you looked at, and the questions that were being asked as to whether somebody's opinion of the candidates changed because of the debate, but it was, at best, a marginal amount, and at worst, it really didn't have a major effect. Kamala Harris has been doing pretty consistently better ever since the Democratic National Convention in Chicago back in August, a little more than a month ago, and that has been a trend across the board, as opposed to having some spike that came out of the debate. But the debate definitely didn't help Donald Trump. It was not something that caused him to suddenly recapture first place over Kamala Harris being in second place in many critical swing states. We mentioned Pennsylvania, but in all the other 6-7 swing states, the Georgias, the North Carolinas, the Wisconsins, the Arizonas, Nevada, you know, these are the states where the race is going to ultimately be won and lost. And you know, this is also to a little wrinkle, and I'll just bring it up because it just doesn't get talked about a whole lot, but there's a weird thing going on in Nebraska, of all places. And Nebraska is one of those two states, Maine being the other one, where it's not a winner-take-all state. Without going into the deep math, basically they award electoral votes proportionally, and they do so by who wins statewide, but also who wins in individual congressional districts. And the city of Omaha is actually factoring in a major way. The Harris campaign is spending a ton of money there, too, to try to win a one electoral vote win in the congressional district that includes Omaha. And I bring that up only to say, too, that as we have this vice presidential debate and we have things just, you know, in the final endgame right now, that every little electoral vote is going to matter here for these candidates. And it wouldn't be shocking, I think, in the vice presidential debate to actually have the state of Nebraska name dropped by one of the candidates. Pay attention to that and, you know, buy me a beer when I'm back in Buffalo, if I'm actually right.
That was my next question. A lot of people pointing to that district. There was talk of making a winner-take-all state, Dave, but that got shot down.
It did, and it got shot down mainly by Republicans. And one Republican state senator in particular said, way too late in the game. This is not how we do it. This is just a political power grab, and you know, this is the way we've been doing it for decades. So we're not going to change it now. This is a 30-year precedent that we have, and it's just not the time to do this. If we're going to do it, we got to do it for the next election.
Dave, obviously, you know, you and I, in our conversations over the last 3 years, since the last election, I feel like we've been talking about polling leading up to this election. So I can't make it any different 38 days before Election Day. And you look at the swing states, the Real Clear Politics average, and every swing state seems to be within the margin of error. I cannot remember the last time that happened.
Yeah, and we've obviously had very close elections the past two, and we've had pretty close elections going back the past 30 years or 20 years at least, depending on the year, some closer than others. But in these swing states, I mean, it is incredibly close, and the polls will change. Polls are as we talk about almost every other time we have a conversation, they are snapshots in time. They move, they shift, they go up, they go down. And, you know, one thing also, too, going back to the vice presidential debate that everyone should pay very, very close attention to is the conversation that the two candidates have about the economy, because, of course, this has been something that the Trump campaign has been spending a fortune on, trying to convince Americans that a Donald Trump administration for the next 4 years will be much better on the economy than it will be under a Harris administration. But it's also coming at the same time, too, where a lot of the points that the Trump campaign has been making over the past several months, and then certainly the many months before that when Joe Biden was still topping the ticket, is things have changed on the ground. You know, inflation, it's way down. Gas prices, they're way down. Unemployment, they're near historical lows. The stock market, it's way up. So expect that there's going to be, I would imagine, some rather notable back and forth and some questions from the moderators, Margaret Brennan and Nora O'Donnell, who are going to be the two women up there with the two men, the candidates, and talking about the economy and whether this is actually something that the Trump campaign still believes. Of course, they still believe it, but is the reality changed in a way where that's going to be an advantage for the Harris campaign? Expect that to be debated. And the Harris campaign, of course, has been making the case, and Tim Walz will likely make the case, too, in his own words, that a Harris economic agenda, one that gives people money to buy their first home or is, you know, going to be able to allow small businesses that they start up for the first time to give them more support. These are going to be items that get debated. So, you know, this is going to be a vibes debate in a major, major way, and policy may get kind of shoved to the side a little bit, but the economy is going to be a policy position and a policy issue that is almost certainly going to play front and center in the policy elements of this debate.
Dave, my final question, and it's about a state that I visit very often, a state that you live right above or next to. I don't know the geography. And that's the state of Virginia, where Glenn Youngkin, a Republican, is very popular, has a very popular favorability rating. You know, Harris does have a 4.8 lead in the Real Clear politics average. Do you see the Trump campaign making any more stops to Virginia, or is that kind of just not close enough?
Right now, it is no better than the top eight on the list of states all across the country where Trump is going to need to put time and resources. And that's just the reality of having those seven swing states across the country that are going to be so absolutely pivotal. Now, Joe, that said, Virginia is one of those states where the elements that could lead to a surprising Trump performance are present. Glenn Youngkin has not exactly been a complete 100% unabashed, unadulterated, shoulder-to-shoulder MAGA Trump supporter of Donald Trump all the way through, and at times has distanced himself. But Virginia is a very purple state. It's more blue than it is red these days, but it does have that possibility, and of course has demonstrated that it's willing to elect Republicans to statewide office where some weird things could happen. So we've got roughly 6 weeks until Election Day, and Donald Trump, it to your question directly, if he shows up in Virginia a little bit more, then his campaign clearly has seen what you're seeing, which is that there may be an opportunity there to move the needle just a little bit, which could potentially be enough to pull up a big upset in Virginia when most people think that it's going to go Harris.
You know, you and I have talked about this, Dave, but those states always fascinate me. You've got Andy Beshear in very red Kentucky. He's a popular Democrat governor in a red Kentucky. And you've got Youngkin in a purple, but as you said, more blue lately, Virginia, who's a popular Republican. Those kind of things always surprise me because, you know, here in New York, most of our elections just go one way.
Yeah, and New York is New York, but it is not a reflection of the way things work in the states that you mentioned. I would add New Hampshire to that list. I would add Massachusetts to that list, which has a history of electing Republicans to the governor's office there in Boston, despite the fact that it is as blue a state as you almost can get. And then in Maryland, just down the road from me here in Washington, D.C., there's a one heck of a U.S. Senate debate flying a little bit below the radar, but Larry Hogan, the former governor, a Republican in a very blue state, very popular nevertheless, and he's in a one heck of a race with Angela Alsobrooks, the Democrat, who's a county executive in a county that that borders Washington, D.C. It's entirely possible that he could win that race, even if he's trailing a little bit in the polls, too. So there are definitely some fascinating contours down ballot, where as much as we talk about the presidential race, and as well as you know, Joe, the House and the Senate, they are absolutely both up for grabs here, and Democrats and Republicans both have an opportunity to win from the other party or to hold for themselves the two sides of Congress, which will be pivotal to the way this country's government works over the next 2 to 4 years.
A month of this left, Dave, and we'll be talking with you leading up to it. Dave, be loud for the Bills today. Hope you bring back a victory with you.
I hope so, too. Go Bills.